Proverbs tonight. Proverbs chapter 5. We'll look at the entire chapter. We have wisdom's instruction about sexuality here in Proverbs chapter 5. We'll read the entire chapter. My son, attend or pay attention unto my wisdom. Bow thine ear, listen to my instruction, that or in order that thou mayest regard discretion or have discretion, and thy lips may keep knowledge. The lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb, and her mouth is smoother than oil, but her end is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold on hell. Lest thou shouldst ponder the path of life, her ways are movable, that thou canst not know them. Hear me now, therefore, O ye children, and depart not from the words of my mouth. Remove thy way from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. And thou mourn at the last, when thy flesh and thy body are consumed, and say, how have I hated instruction, and my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. It was almost in all evil, in the midst of the congregation and assembly. Drink waters out of thine own cistern, and running waters out of thine own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of water in the streets. Let them be only thine own, and not strangers with thee. Let thy fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth. Let her be as thy has the loving hind and pleasant roe. Let her breast satisfy thee at all times, and be thou ravished always with her love. And why wilt thou, my son, be ravished with a strange woman and embrace the bosom of a stranger? The ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. His own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. The chapter here illustrates the long-range consequences of sin, and a wise individual can always look beyond right now. A wise individual can see the long-range view of sin. And the long-range view of sin is never good. Never good. We see here in the verses 3 through 14, verses 1 and 2 is a call to pay attention, to listen. In verses 3 through 14, there is some instruction against sexual sin. And that, of course, is very prevalent in the day in which we live, and Solomon has much to say about it in the book of Proverbs. But society today suffers from being overstimulated sexually and, believe it or not, underinformed about sex. Today's society is obsessed with sex. They are sex craze, the advertising and entertainment industries use sexual stimulation as a major motivator in advancing their various causes. So there should be no doubt that we live in a time of great sexual impurity. When sex is in the forefront, you can't get away from it everywhere you go. It's there. Our society basically is engulfed in a cloud of moral filth, And it's everywhere. You just can't escape it. The danger, and there are many, but the danger of a sexually saturated society is the message that that society sends. And the message they send is that a person can act under sexual impulses. They can violate the moral laws of God as set forth in His Word and escape the consequences of God. That's the message that's being sent today. That's the message that's being sent on TV. That's the message that's being sent over the airwaves. That's the message that we're being bombarded with constantly, that one can violate the moral laws of God, one can defile the marriage bed, and there be no consequences. Now notice in Hebrews chapter 13, and verse 4. It says, marriage, and that's between male and female, is honorable in all, and the bed, that is the marriage bed, undefiled. But whoremongers, because they defile the marriage bed, and adulterers who defile the marriage bed, God will judge. Now that verse is still true today. God has given us a lot of boundaries for our own protection, for the protection of society. Marriage is one of those boundaries. And God has designed that sex be enjoyed only within the realm of marriage and to the person to whom one is married to. That is God's design. That is the boundaries that God has set. Now, one of the designs of marriage is to prevent sexual impurity. Notice in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, 1 Corinthians chapter 7, and verse 2, 1 Corinthians 7, verse 2, nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, and let every woman have her own husband. Then notice verse 8 and verse 9. I say therefore to the unmarried and widows, it is good for them if they abide even as I. But if they cannot contain, let them marry. For it is better to marry than to burn. Now, any sexual union prior to the marriage bed is sin. It's always sin. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what public opinion says. It doesn't matter what society says. It doesn't matter what the educators say. None of that matters. The only thing that matters is what does God have to say. And God very plainly tells us any sexual union prior to the marriage bed is sin, and anything that would promote or anything that would stimulate dress, anything that would stimulate such a union is sin. That, of course, eliminates a lot of garbage on the internet. That eliminates a lot of garbage on the television, and on we can go. That eliminates a lot of magazines. Anything that would stimulate lust, anything that would stimulate such a union is sin. Now, such sin is referred to as fornication. Notice in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 3 through verse 5. For this is the will of God, even your sanctification. That is, it is the will of God that you stay pure. That is the will of God. You know that. You may not know a lot of things about the will of God, but you know that. This is the will of God, your sanctification, that ye should abstain, a word that society hates today, that ye should abstain from fornication, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles, which know not God. So we're warned here against fornication, which is sexual intercourse between unmarried persons. That's fornication. Now Matthew 5 verse 27 tells us that thou shalt not commit adultery. Now adultery and fornication, they're the same act, but they are different. Adultery is sexuality between a married person, someone other than his or her husband or wife. That's adultery. So we have fornication, we have adultery. Both defile the marriage bed. Both go beyond the boundaries that God has established in marriage. So sexual expression outside of marriage, and just any sexual expression, doesn't matter. Doesn't, whether the act is committed or not, sexual, any sexual expression is absolutely forbidden outside of the marriage relationship. Now, God has ordained that the marriage union has the only acceptable realm where sexual needs are to be met. So engaging in sexual activity before or outside of marriage is sin, and it is selfish gratification. All that being said, we see here in verses 3 through 6 that there is a warning against the appeal of sexual impurity. Now you have to remember that this is a father instructing his son. The father is instructing his son about wise living. And because it is a father instructing his son, because it is a father talking to his son, the warning is about the adulteress. But there is a principle that we cannot miss. There is a principle set down here. The principles we find here apply to all kinds, apply to all types of sexual temptation. Again, the word adulteress, or the woman, is used here because it is the father talking to the son. But again, it refers to all sexual temptation, not just the man's temptation toward a woman. So the adulteress, the whoremonger here, represents any source of sexual temptation. That's a principle that is laid down here in Proverbs chapter 5. Now notice in verse 3, it says, the lips of a strange woman drop as a honeycomb. Now again, this can be a woman or a man, but it's a father addressing his son. That is, she promises pleasure. Is that not exactly what sexual temptation does? It promises pleasure. It just simply promises pleasure. And her mouth is smoother than oil. That speaks of her fair speeches. That speaks of her enticing and flattering words. And again, what the temptation promises is always better than what it really delivers. Sin, whether it's sexual or whatever, sin presents the bait and always hides the hook. If you knew this is going to ruin my life, this is going to destroy others, if you knew that, certainly you'd have enough decency not to do it. But people who fall into these sins don't know that, because they've been deceived. They've been deceived by, and again, this applies to any temptation. He goes on, he says, but, that is, contrary to what she says, her end, which is the result of compliance with her. In this case, we'll say it is the result of compliance with temptation. Here it's talking about sexual temptation. So, compliance with temptation, let us never forget this, has an end. It has an end. But her end is bitter. And that word bitter, we could translate that in our English language as acidic. Acidic. It is acidic as wormwood. It is sharp. That simply means it's excruciating. It is agonizing as a two-edged sword. Her feet, or her ways, go down to death. They never go up. They go down. Again, I'm not just talking about, as he is here, about the woman. I'm talking about sexual temptation in general. The path of that is always down. Down to death. Now, what is death? Death is a separation. Death is separation. This is something that is going to cause separation. This is something that is going to cause destruction. And then it says her steps take hold on hell. That speaks of the destructiveness of her ways. So never is the beginning as sweet as the end is bitter. And we must remember that about all temptation. And we must remember about that about all sexual temptation. Now it goes on to say in verse 6, lest, that is, to avoid the risk of, that you should ponder or contemplate the path of life or her ways, so that you will not think about it, so that you will not give it too much thought. Her ways are movable. That is, she has many different forms. Doesn't want you to think about it for too long. Doesn't want you to begin to think about how that this might ruin my life, that this might bring great harm to my life. The devil doesn't want you to think about that too long. So he shifts his plans and his modes of attack. And then in verse 7, there is an exhortation concerning wisdom in the light of the deceitfulness of temptation. It says, hear me now, therefore, O ye children. He is pleading. He is saying, please listen to what I am telling you. And we see this message all through God's Word. God is saying, listen. Listen to what I am saying. Listen to what I am telling you. How many times you have heard people say, only if I would have listened. How true. Only if I would have listened. Only if I would have listened to wise instruction, I would have spared my life many things. That's true in all areas of our life, not just in areas of sexuality. That's true in all areas of our life. We have to learn to listen. And wisdom listens. Wisdom does not disregard the words of God. Wisdom wants to hear. So if we're wise, we want to hear. But not only do we hear, and depart not from the words of my mouth. That is, do not let my warnings and my directions depart from thee. And again, this truth is taught all through the book of Proverbs. Then in verse 8, there is a warning concerning an approach toward sexual temptation. Again, wisdom, as we've already stressed in prior lessons, does not even approach temptation. Wisdom does not play with sin. Wisdom does not take temptation lightly. If you know anything at all about the corruption of your flesh, temptation itself should scare you. If you know anything at all of what you are capable of doing, then you should want to stay as far away from temptation as possible. And wisdom will do that. Wisdom will stay away. Now notice what it says here in verse 8. It says, remove thy way far from her. That is, you keep the greatest distance that you can possibly keep from sexual temptation or any temptation. You keep distance. Remove thy way. That is, remove the way of your mind from her. Do not allow your mind to go near temptation. Do not allow your mind to go near temptation where you begin to think upon that which is forbidden. So remove your mind from her. Remove the way of your walk from her. Don't go near her house. Don't go near her. You stay away. You stay as far away as possible. Well, I don't want to be unfriendly. You be unfriendly. You be unfriendly. Realizing the power of your sinful nature and realizing the strength of temptation, you just stay away. So you remove the way of your mind. You remove the way of your walk. Remove the way of your conversation from her. As you do not enter into a conversation about things that are going to lead to temptation. When people are talking about filth, get away from it. Get away. Do not enter into a conversation. Keep your remove thy conversation. Remove your eyes. That is, you do not look in the direction of temptation. You do not converse with her. You do not put yourself, what this is saying is you do not put yourself in a position where you can be ensnared by her. Wisdom will do that. Wisdom will tell us you do not even put yourself in a position where you might be tempted. Don't put yourself in such a position. That's wisdom. Now, the world today, if you go out of your way not to put yourself in such a position, the world's going to think that you've lost your mind. And the world will say, well, don't you trust her or don't you trust him? It has nothing to do about trusting them. I don't trust myself. I know my flesh. We all have the same flesh. It's just simply not trusting sinful flesh. So you just do not put yourself in that position. And again, a lot of people would have spared themselves much sorrow had they not even put themselves in the position. And it goes on, it says, and come not nigh the door of her house. That means avoid her. Again, we're not just, this is a father talking to his son. We're not just talking about the harlot here. We're not just talking about the adulteress here. We're talking about temptation in general. Sexual temptation. Come not nigh the door of her house. That is, avoid her. Do not go in the way of temptation. Be fearful. Be fearful of temptation. Avoid all questionable. Avoid all questionable situations. Just avoid those situations. Don't put yourself in those situations. Steer clear of sexual temptation. Now, the same truth is taught over in Proverbs 6, verse 27 through 29. It says, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Now, you'd be a fool to take fire in your bosom But it's the same as playing with temptation. You're going to get burned. Verse 28, can one go upon hot coals and his feet not be burned? The application is, so he that goeth into his neighbor's wife, whosoever toucheth her, shall not be innocent. Shall not be innocent. He's going to fall. That individual is going to fall. Paul exhorted Timothy. He said, flee. That is, run away from. Make a hasty retreat from fornication, from youthful lust. Flee youthful lust. Flee them. Flee temptation. Do not do anything to encourage lust. Do not do anything to encourage your sinful nature. We need to get a real good understanding of just how sinful, how depraved, and how corrupt our nature is. We need to know that. We need to know that for our own protection. Then he goes on in verses 9 through 14. He talks about the consequences of flirting with sexual temptation. And he lists several consequences that his son can expect if he gives into the temptation. He says it will drain your strength. It will cost you money. It can cut your life short. And it will fill you with regrets. Verses 12 through verse 14, we have the regrets and say, how have I hated instruction, my heart despised reproof, and have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined mine ear to them that instructed me. I was almost in all evil in the midst of the congregation and assembly. He's talking about regret there. If you play around with temptation, you're going to have a life of regret. And a life of regret does not coincide with a life of joy and a life of happiness. So to avoid regret, stay away from it. Stay as far away as possible. The lesson here is this, that sin, whether it be sexual or not, sin in general, does not satisfy. Sin always leads to more sin. Always. And sin leads to enslavement. Sin leads to that which is degrading, leads to humiliation. You see, today, people want to sin. And they want to sin, and they don't want to be degraded in any way. They don't want to be humiliated in any way. I've got news for you. That's the nature of sin. You play with sin. You play with temptation. And you will be humiliated. That's what sin does. There's no escaping that. And sin steals away joy. Again, we read of the pleasures of sin for a season in Hebrews 11, 25. Moses understood that, yes, sin has some pleasure. But the pleasures of sin is only for a season. It's short-lived. And then comes the regret. Then comes the humiliation. Then comes the degradation. Then comes all the sadness. So remember the law of sowing and reaping. Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8. And oh, so many people today, they'll commit sin, and because God doesn't punish them right then on the spot, they'll say, well, the Lord must approve or he would have done something about it. See, what you don't understand about sowing, the general law of sowing, you don't reap the very minute you put the seed in the ground. It takes some time. And that's true of sin, because we have the laws of sowing and reaping. And what you sow not only affects you, it can have an impact upon others as well. Matthew chapter 6, if we turn there. Matthew 6, verse 13. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. When we pray, we ought to pray as one who is fearful of temptation. You know, people, you stay away from temptation, and people say, well, you act like you're scared. You betcha. We ought to be scared of temptation. Someone will say, well, the temptation itself isn't sin. You ought to be scared of temptation. It ought to terrify you because of what it will lead to. So don't play with temptation. Then beginning with verse 15 through verse 20, he gives some remedies against sexual sin. And basically the message of verses 15 through 20 is build a strong marriage. Build a strong marriage. That's again, God has given us marriage as a boundary. And in these verses, the father instructing his son uses the metaphor of water to describe sexuality. And what he's doing is he's telling his son, you honor marriage and you stay within the sexual boundaries of marriage. In verse 15, he said, drink waters out of thine own cistern. Again, he's talking about marriage, he's talking about sex. And running waters out of thine own well. You don't need anyone else's cistern. You don't need anyone else's well. You drink out of your own cistern, and you drink out of your own well. Let thy fountains be dispersed abroad and rivers of waters in the streets. That's talking about procreation. It's talking about children. Verse 16. Let them be only thine own, the children, and not strangers with thee. We hear much today about the dysfunctional family. And almost all families are dysfunctional today because they do not pay attention to God's boundaries. They do not pay attention to God's laws. And so we have dysfunctional families everywhere. Let thy fountain be blessed. That is, again, father talking to his son, but it applies both ways. What he's saying is, you make your wife happy. You make her happy by keeping to her and keeping from others. These are the bounds that God has set. This is done by behaving in a loving and respectful manner. Husbands are to love their wives. Ephesians 5, verse 25. The older women are to teach the younger women how to love their husbands. Titus chapter 2 and verse 4. The love between a husband and wife is a love of priority. It is a sacrificial love. It is a purifying love. You do nothing that would bring impurity into the life of your spouse. It is a caring love. It is a mutual love. It is a mutual love of appreciation. It is a sharing. It is a esteem. It's a mutual help. It's a mutual consideration. It's mutual cooperation. It's mutual commitment. You keep her happy. You keep him happy. That's the message here. And this is a safeguard against sexual impurity. In other words, mutual love will keep you from much temptation. Just the fact that you love your wife, just the fact that you love your husband, will keep you from temptation. It will keep you from it. But not only that, we have to keep all intruders out of our marriage. Have to keep all intruders out. And there are many things today, many intruders that have been allowed to creep into marriages today that are ripping them apart. Not only are ripping them apart, but putting them in danger of sexual temptations because other intruders have been allowed. So he's telling us here, let thy fountain be blessed. And then it says, rejoice or be glad with the wife of thy youth. Express joy and pleasure in one another. And this can cause you to avoid temptation. If you know that your spouse has joy in you and pleasure in you, that should protect you from temptation. So what he's telling us is build a strong marriage. It's a source of strength against temptation. Then he goes on and says, let her be as the loving hind and pleasant roe. That is, she or he, again, it's a father writing to his son, she should always appear to be beautiful in your eyes. Always appear to be lovely in your eyes. You don't have to look anywhere else. And then it says, let her breast satisfy thee at all times. She is to be the source of your satisfaction. He is to be the source of your satisfaction. Husbands and wives are to find satisfaction with one another. And of course, this avoids temptation. And then it goes on to say, and be thou ravished or enchanted and captivated, always with her love. That is, always delighting in one another. And a mutual captivation will keep from the temptation of sexual impurity. Then in verse 20, the question is asked, why would one be so foolish to leave the wholesome fountain, your spouse, for the poisoned and forbidden waters? Why? Why would you be so foolish? And it is foolish. It's always foolish to go beyond God's set boundaries. And God has given us the boundary of marriage. And it's foolish to go beyond that boundary. It's always foolish. It's always wrong. It's always sin. Then he goes on and he says, and again, this to safeguard us from temptation. In verse 21, there is a reminder. For the ways of man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he pondereth all his goings. That is saying is, you better remember that everything is observed by the Lord. He knows your every thought. He knows your thought before you think it. Don't play with temptation. God sees everything. And then lastly, verse 22 and verse 23, his own iniquity shall take the wicked himself, and he shall be holden with the cords of his sins. He shall die without instruction, and in the greatness of his folly he shall go astray. What they're telling us here is that our sinful choices have the potential of ensnaring us for the rest of our lives. Not just for a little while, but it has the potential to ensnare you for the rest of your life. Remember this. When you begin to play with temptation. Again, Solomon, he's a man who fell. And he's warning us in wisdom. God's wisdom warns us. Stay away. Stay away from sin. Stay away from all temptation. You better be careful where you go on the internet. You better be careful what you watch on television. You better be careful who you hang around with. You better be careful with the opposite sex. I don't care how good of friends they are. You better be careful. At all times. Because of the corruption of our flesh. So again, these are words of wisdom concerning temptation, concerning sin, in particular sexual immorality. If we would just follow God's instruction, pay attention, listen to God's instruction. The problem today is people can come to church two times a week and hear God's instruction. But 7 days a week, they're hearing the world's instruction and the world saying, it's okay, it's okay. It's not okay. You just have to make up your mind right now. Who's right? Man or God? I mean, that's what it comes down to. And God has given us marriage as a boundary. And you would be wise to respect. You would be wise to respect that boundary. It'll save you a lot of trouble. It'll save you a lot of heartache in your life. Brother Mark, if you'd come and lead